The murder investigation was proceeding slowly. There was still no word from the OSBI lab on the initial fingerprint, hair, and saliva submissions. Samples from 31 Ada men, including Ron Williamson and Dennis Fritz, were being processed. Glenn Gore still had not been asked to provide hair and saliva. By September 1983, all hair samples were on the backlog desk of Melvin Hett, an OSBI hair analyst. On November 9th, Ron, while in jail, submitted to another polygraph exam, this one also administered by the OSBI agent Rusty Featherstone. It was a two-hour meeting with lots of questions before Ron was wired for the polygraph. He continually and adamantly denied any involvement in or knowledge of the murder. The test was again deemed inconclusive, and the entire interview was videotaped. Ron adjusted to life behind bars. He kicked the booze and pills because he had no choice, and he managed to continue his habit of sleeping 20 hours a day. But without medication or treatment of any type, he continued a slow mental decline. Later in November, another inmate, Vicki Michelle Owen Smith, told Detective Dennis Smith an odd story about Ron. Dennis Smith made the following report. At 0300 or 0400 hours, Saturday morning, Ron Williamson looked out his window and saw Vicki. Williamson yelled that she was a witch and that Vicki was the one who took him to Debbie Carter's house, and now she had brought him Debbie's spirit into his cell, and it was haunting the hell out of him. Williamson also screamed for his mother to forgive him. In December, 1 year after the murder, Glenn Gore was asked to stop by the police station and give a statement. He denied any involvement in the death of Debbie Carter. He said he'd seen her at the coach light a few hours before she was killed, and added the new wrinkle that she had asked him to dance with her because Ron Williamson was making her uncomfortable. The fact that no one else at the coach light reported seeing Ron there was apparently insignificant. But as anxious as the cops were to paste together a case against him, the evidence was simply too scant. There was not a single fingerprint lifted from the Carter apartment that matched either Ron or Dennis Fritz, a gaping hole in the theory that the two were there during the prolonged and violent attack. There were no eyewitnesses. No one heard a sound that night. The hair analysis, always shaky at best, was still bottlenecked in Melvin Hett's office at the OSBI. The case against Ron consisted of two inconclusive polygraph exams, a bad reputation, a residence not far from that of the victims, and the delayed, half-baked eyewitness identification of Glenn Gore. The case against Dennis Fritz was even weaker. 1 year after the murder, the only tangible result of the investigation had been the firing of a ninth-grade science teacher. In January 1984, Ron pleaded guilty to the forgery charge and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. He was transported to a correctional center near Tulsa, and it wasn't long before his odd behavior attracted the attention of the staff. He was transferred to an intermediate mental health unit for observation. Dr. Robert Briety interviewed him on the morning of February 13th and noted, "He is usually subdued and appears in control of his actions." But during an interview that afternoon, Dr. Briety saw a different person. Ron was hypomanic, loud, irritable, easily excited, has loose associations, flight of ideas, irrational thoughts, and some paranoid ideation. Further evaluation was suggested. Security was not tight at the intermediate unit. Ron found a baseball field nearby and enjoyed sneaking over at night for the solitude. A policeman found him once, napping on the field, and escorted him back to the unit. The staff slapped his wrist and made him write a report. It reads, "I was feeling down the other night and needed some time to think things out. I've always felt peaceful on a ball field. I strolled out to the ball field's southeast corner and kind of like an old blue tick hound, I curled up under the shade tree. A few minutes later, a police officer asked me to go back to the CTC building. I met Brent's halfway up the field and we walked in the front door together. He said that, after seeing I wasn't up to no good, that he'd forget it. However, as this letter attests, I've been given a write-up.